Hello, this is a show from Radio. We're a group of stations bringing new and forgotten ways of making radio to our listeners. Each week, we give artists the challenge to make radio that works across all of Europe and beyond. Are you up for it?
Diana the Musical by David Bryan and Joe DiPietro. Day 1. Yesterday, I spoke to my friend Robin on the internet. Robin is a very nice and very intelligent person, and I was talking to Robin about my recent fascination with making commemorative memorabilia of the British royal family, but using images of actors from made-for-TV movies instead of the genuine article. I started doing this a few months back. It arose from becoming obsessed with made-for-TV movies about the British royal family. I made a series of commemorative plates, usually using made-for-TV movie actors playing the royals, but sometimes cheating a bit and using royals from lookalike agencies.
We all want our love to be for always.
Box, canvas, high-class deluxe, wall art was the inevitable next stage. I made orders for deluxe printed stills of the cast of Harry and Meghan, a royal romance observing a military parade.
We all want our love to be for always.
And ordered for my sister, who lives in one of the UK's first modernist houses a couple of doors down from where Stravinsky used to bunk, an A3 plush box of Murray Fraser as Harry.
Make it last forever. I'll be loving you. Love that's true.
Which, I hope, has taken pride of place in her living room. It didn't stop there. I went on the eBay. I discovered there was a made-for-TV royal movie about Prince Andrew. This I had to see. It's called Fergie and Andrew Behind Palace Doors. And perhaps, for obvious reasons, it is difficult, if not impossible, to find. And I did not find it. What I did find, however, on the eBay was a set of 40 colour slides from a German TV network, emblazoned with German language text of plush, deluxe colour stills from Fergie and Andrew Behind Palace Doors.
I really need these
and
slides.
Oh, how they glow. The reds are so red, the greens the greenest green I've ever seen.
Okay, I've ordered the
Each slide is branded with the text Fergie und Andrew Scandal im Palast. Copyright TM3, which it turns out was a television network that ran from 1995 to 2011, with a particular focus on women, fashion shows, and daily lifestyle. One night, I spent hours shining a torch through the slides, making royal abstract shapes on the walls in the pitch darkness. The reds were so red and the greens the greenest greens I'd ever seen. I had relayed all of this to Robin in Poland, who replied, "I see they've made a musical about Princess Diana." Have they now? So, today, I watched Diana, the musical. Day 2. Yesterday, I watched Diana the Musical. Lottie also watched it.
Why was Barbara Cartland in it?
I woke with the songs from Diana the Musical swirling around in my head. Lottie was humming songs from Diana the Musical whilst chopping food for the guinea pigs. The guinea pigs are called Suet Gerald and Vivian Westwood. They are large and rotund, but covered in long, flamboyant hair. They would sit in well for one of Barbara Cartland's dogs, in fact. It struck me how long it had been since I'd seen Harry and Meghan, A Royal Romance. Barbara Cartland wasn't in that. But Barbara Cartland, to our mutual surprise, was a character in Diana the Musical. Not only did we learn that Diana was, by marriage, related to Barbara Cartland, we also learned so much and were reminded of so much about Barbara Cartland. Her sheer profligacy. She wrote 800 novels which, as described in Diana the Musical, apparently all have the same plot. I have to talk about it like this, as much to my shame, I've never read a Barbara Cartland novel, but there are a lot of them.
If you piled them one on top of the other, how tall would that be?
Looking directly before me as I write, I can see 67 books, all of various widths, but I suppose averaging out. The thinnest I can see is Stephen Temison's Woof Woof or Who Killed Richard Wagner, and the thickest I can see is Walter Moore's 13 and a half lives of Captain Bluebear. So, somewhere in the Barbara Cartland equation, this evens out to an average book. This row of 67 books makes 1 metre 57 centimetres, so let us approximate 100 books to be 2 metres. This would make Barbara Cartland's books stack. Reach 16 metres into the sky.
Time is the reef upon which all our ships are wrecked.
We decided to make it and went back to the eBay.
We all want our love to be for always. We cannot bear to think of the rapture and wonder of it coming to an end. And we strive with our hearts and souls to make it last forever.
Day 6. All the Barbara Cartland books have arrived. We didn't manage to get quite all of them.
But we've got quite a lot of them.
In the intervening time, we haven't watched Diana the Musical again, but it has been, somehow, lodged in the forefront of our respective minds.
How does James Hewitt feel about this? It's a song about him having sex with someone who died.
We used Yoohoo to glue the books together and fixed the backs of them with lollipop sticks until we realised this really wouldn't do the job.
Then we
had to go down to B&Q to pick up some plush, deluxe, quality timber, both for holding the stack of books together, but also for support at the rear, because we quite forgot about the centre of gravity in our late-night speculations. The tower of Barbara Cartland books did indeed reach something around 14 to 16 metres into the sky. The neighbours didn't mind, because they were both fans of Barbara Cartland, and plus I'd agreed to take Ruth's recycling out every week. The eventual structure, for an afternoon, became quite the tourist attraction. Small, fluffy dogs convened to worship. Day 7. We watched Diana the Musical again. It all came flooding back. Prince Charles's sudden burst of body popping, which is followed by an interplay of gestures between Charles and Diana that is somewhere between semaphore and seizure. At the rear, Diana's wrinkled retainer, Paul Burrell, is playing Bach's first cello suite. We don't know it's Paul Burrell playing the cello yet, but we'll find out in time. He has a sort of magical cello, a cello that is a standard cello on one side, but flip it around, you have a techno space age cello in white gloss and internal illumination. This can be rotated, depending upon the cellist's, Paul Burrell's, mood, whether he's feeling like a classicist or a rocker. But it doesn't matter, because the world has Diana the Musical in it now, in which Paul Burrell plays Baroque music. There was heavy rain, and the Barbara Cartland Tower melted somewhat in the night, and the neighbour's garden was full of paperbacks. We cleared it up. They were all right about it, because I'm taking their recycling out for them. This was at 5 a.m. Day 8. Found a trailer for Fergie and Andrew behind palace doors. Weirdly, today I didn't sweat at all. I couldn't stop thinking about the rhyming structures in Diana the Musical, so I had to transcribe the rhymes of some of the musical numbers. I carved these words into a large, flat stone.
Come
friends,
Manila,
ends, poor bore, alive, arrive,
show,
bitch,
boys,
shit, discontent, event,
destroys,
Manila, Camilla,
divorce,
hats, fights,
bright,
became
mini
night,
like
show,
mini
go,
dumb,
go, sir, wife,
now,
her pride,
well,
ringside. Chat
pride,
that long gone life,
side,
wife, clear,
sad,
here
mad,
is lives, not plot,
not
mad, sad, side,
is
bride.
Here, clear, wife,
way,
life,
day, well,
long,
hell, now,
chat,
fun,
ringside,
leave, done,
pride,
ninny light,
wife,
ninny bright,
sir,
divorce,
go, go,
destroys,
show,
me boys,
became, fight,
show,
hats,
blow,
Camilla,
Manila, Camilla,
Camilla, Manila,
tongue,
Manila,
flung,
event,
be, free,
shit,
free,
bit, arrive,
air,
alive,
affair,
poor,
out,
end,
about. Paperbacks keep falling from the scaffolding. Oh, and Lottie's Barry Guy t-shirt turned up.
Barry Guy seems like a very nice person.
I'll be loving you always.
Your boss and I is to be full of careers.
It is
spotted
by you,
not yet. Always.
Now it is spotted by you.
Day 9. We had some problems with the boiler. The hot water isn't staying hot, making a shower the experience of holding a lethally cold object at a safe distance until such a time as you can take 20 seconds of hot panacea. This makes the start of the day either A, greatly delayed, or B, highly traumatic. A day that can start with the intention of high and mighty achievement can quickly collapse into a day where we say to one another, shall we watch Diana the Musical again? There's a little bit in Diana the Musical where Charles talks about his ideas on architecture. I gather that Charles's ideas on architecture constitute a sort of private mission of neoclassicism. I lived for a while in Dorset, and in order to take the train to London, or indeed anywhere, necessitated a trip on the bus to Dorchester South train station. Between my house and Dorchester South train station was Poundbury, Charles's architectural utopia, classified as an urban extension and an example of a movement known as New Urbanism. From a distance, it looks like a toy town, some sort of little fire station on the outside, before little model, off-white, sort of quick-fix Georgian buildings. As the bus gets closer, the streaks of black and dirt begin to show up on the big, plain, bright sides of the buildings. The streets are almost always empty, despite the parked cars. This experiment in urban planning centres around a carousel-like structure containing things like a barber's or a butcher's, I can't remember, flanked by a tiny statue of the Queen Mother that stands atop an oversized plinth because people were worried about vandalism. From the angle the spectator is obliged to look at her from, she resembles an imitation Giacometti. Poundbury is a peculiar and rather haunting place, and I have to say I rather like it. I used to fantasize about making an episode of Doctor Who there and wrapping up the postbox in tinfoil to be the Dalek. I don't think I ever actually got off the bus in Poundbury, so it always went by like a film projection. Today I spoke with my mother on the telephone. I mentioned briefly that I'd watched Diana the Musical. My mother, aghast, spat out the words, "I'm never watching that!" I'm surprised. My mother is the director of Buckfastleigh Pantomime Group and puts on some pretty large-scale, ambitious shows, and I'd already begun to have fantasies about this ensemble staging their very own Diana the Musical. Day 10. We awoke at 5:30 a.m. and watched Diana the Musical. Diana references a number of popular music combos. Elton John, whom she wishes Paul Burrell would metamorphose into, the Pet Shop Boys, who encourage cacophony. Adam Ant, for whom one is required to relinquish something. Queen, who, hypothetically, would give a killer performance. Your goddamn bloody happy people. Day 10. Today I heard from my mother. She has now watched Diana the Musical and reports back, better than I thought it would be. And some parts of it are actually quite moving. I'm happy for my mother and hope she starts watching it as much as I do. I like to try to help to enrich the lives of those I love. Also tonight I painted a large-scale portrait of Barbara Cartland and one of her dogs. I used a projector to trace the shapes, so it's fairly accurate. I have a pot of very, very bright Dayglow pink, so that came in useful. A couple of years ago, I used a very black paint around an image of a small dog with a pink ribbon on a wall art box canvas. I later added little pearls to the ribbon. To make space for the Barbara Cartland painting, I moved the small dog, affectionately known as Dog in the Void, behind the Barbara Cartland painting.
I think tonight Barbara Cartland is going to appear to me and scare me to death. Then I can be her typist in the afterlife.
As I finish the Barbara Cartland painting, Lottie notices Dog in the Void peeping out from behind Barbara Cartland. And we make the shocking discovery that her dog is almost exactly the same as Dog in the Void. Then Barbara Cartland's voice appears out of nowhere.
I think I've got something which people want to hear. In fact, I know they want to hear it because I've now got 80 million books sold over the world and 45 million
Barbara,
in circulation in America.
Are you
which
here?
I take not as a compliment to me, but a
Where
compliment to England.
From?
Because a long time they said we're not going to have English authors, especially
Barbara.
Romantic ones. And now that
I do genuinely think we're being haunted by Barbara Cartland.
At night time. As I'm sitting up in bed, I see a small, glowing ball of light float across the kitchen. Has it ever been proven that the past, the present, and the future are not one and the same thing? Day 11.
You're very glacial this morning.
Why wouldn't I be? I'd like you to understand that what happened last night was nothing whatever to do with alcohol. I grant you it may have been some form of psychic delusion, but I was stone cold sober from first to last. At around 2 p.m. we give up with a long, complex day and watch Diana the Musical. I'm wondering if this is also the first work of art where Wayne Sleep appears as a character. I've long wanted the world to have a new work of art where the word modern is used in the sense of, oh, how very modern, and the song, She Moves in the Most Modern Ways, more than delivers upon this promise, whilst Wayne Sleep pirouettes in the background. He electrified the joint. It's interesting how much of a blip in wider culture modernism has become. It's good to know David Bryan and Joe DiPietro are at least still singing its praises. Somewhere James Joyce is rejoicing in tongues. The dream is not dead. A guy came round to fix the boiler, a Mr. Condamine. He looked a lot like the guy who sings I may be unwell but I'm handsome as hell to Princess Diana in the AIDS ward. We can now have a hot shower. It's really great. Tomorrow I'm going to have a nice soak in the bath. Thank you, Mr. Condamine. I've hung Barbara Cartland up on the bedroom wall because I feel like it's what the ghost wants. We have a little pink plastic wine glass that I put in front of her so it looks like she's at a party. When we moved the painting from the study to the bedroom, Suet Gerald, one of the guinea pigs, screamed at Lottie in an obviously chastising fashion. It seemed they wanted to be near Barbara. We've never seen them shout like that before. My mother, incidentally, loves the painting and is really happy I'm painting again. Though somehow I feel more like I ought to be writing. In the night, I dreamt I was a small, white, fluffy dog who had learned to type. If you give a million small, fluffy dogs a million typewriters, then eventually one of them will write a romance novel. Day 12.
I think Sir Cyril seems a very pleasant sort of fellow. Good, firm stock, that lad.
I don't much like the way my wife looks at him.
Oh, that's inevitable. Sir Cyril is a very charming and interesting man. The things he's seen. And really, he's such a raconteur about it all. All the ladies are bound to find him irresistible. I wouldn't worry about him, though. He's a good old egg, really.
I suppose you do have to give it to him. He does have quite the physique.
Yes, he's really quite the specimen. Thighs like an ox. That's what you get. 15 years out on the savannah.
From what I gather, the man's game for game and very little else. Single-minded sort of chap.
Is he a married man?
He had a wife some years ago. A remarkable woman. She died in the deepest jungle and has never been found.
Golly, I'm sorry to hear that. I suppose that goes some way to explaining that dark, tempestuous disposition.
At that moment, like a cavalcade of noise, Sir Cyril burst into the room, his eyes wild with rage.
Some scoundrels had away with my rhinoceros!
Day 13. Richard's taut buttocks, firmly ensconced in pristine riding breeches, remained firmly in place, defending themselves impeccably against the forceful, brutal, elemental wind that shook the mighty larches. He caught her glimpsing at it, and a wry, satisfying grin bent itself sideways atop his strong, double-barreled chin. She felt herself blush, and her gaze fixed firmly onto her small, white, doll-like shoes, but all she could see in her mind's eye was that firm, tensilely jodhpur-adorned flesh.
Not the perfect day for a picnic.
His mighty voice rang out through the tumult of air, and images of ham sandwiches and a checkered blanket ghost flying across the plain filled her mind. In that visionary moment, when Emery was so far away in her thoughts, the blustering gale played thief and whipped away her hat.
Oh, gosh!
Richard exclaimed, and he ran immediately after the misbehaved hat, but in that moment of madness, she threw both her hat and her caution to the wind, seized him by his drizzle-mottled jerkin, pulled him toward her, and kissed him. And how she kissed him! She kissed him with the rage and the fury of wronged gods, the eloquence of poetry, the scope of a Pantagruel, the breadth of the world. She kissed him like the lashing of fire, the winsome wince of being stung by a coquettish wasp, with hellfire and brimstone reflecting outlandish, whipping flames onto the firmament. She felt his arms around her grasp tighter, pulling her in towards him, and he returned her kiss like a fruit bat to a pomegranate in the dead of deepest night, a wild horse carousing across endless heath, like rain falling on an umbrella. Their hearts beat together, and his breeches grew tense. She felt his passion gently, gently pressing against her navel. They broke apart, and he began to make a sound. A sort of primal wailing, one might even call it a neighing, which he projected into the sky. Across his face an expression of wild joy.
Can you feel it? Can you feel it, Emery?
The Earth! It's so big! It's amazing to be a part of this wild land! He tore off his shirt and beat his chest. Emery's desire grew thick. It's God, Emery! God is speaking to us through the wind! Emery looked into the sky and a billow of birds blew across the mountaintops like a plume of smoke from a pipe organ that disperses over the altar. She felt something she'd never felt before, and before her very eyes, a nearby mushroom ejected a bevy of spores into the ether to fly away in the raging tempest. Richard had dropped to his knees and, arms outstretched, raged and wept with joy. The tears moistened his dense beard until the area all around his mouth had become wet, and Emery lay on the ground, exhausted, exalted, and staring directly into the face of God. Across the landscape, ham sandwiches danced.
Since this last entry, Ergo no longer talks, but only sleeps and writes. Or rather, they recite and I transcribe. My fingers are blistered and painful. The guinea pigs will not leave Ergo's side and scream and try to bite me if I even attempt to move them. In the last 7 days, Barbara has written 4 medium-length romances and drawn 1 or 2 experimental flying machines. Of the novels they've written so far, The Duchess and the Dorchester Lad is my current favourite, building simmering erotic tension that bubbles almost painfully like a champagne cork 3/4 out of the bottle. In my spare time, of which I don't have a lot because I'm having to do a lot of typing, I tend to watch Diana the Musical and cry. But please don't worry about me. I have a bottle of gin in my bedroom.
I shall then be only the empty shell of what I am now. I love you. I cannot go on through life without you.
Diana the Musical, written by Barbara Cartland, Pierre Menard, Noel Coward, David Bryan, and Joe DiPietro. Performed by Gianna DeWaal, Ro Hartranf, Erin Davies, Judy Kay, Tessa Alves, Zach Adkins, Ashley Andrews, Austin Daniel Bomer, Holly Butler, Bruce Dow, Lauren E.J. Hamilton, Andre Jordan, Gareth Keegan, Nathan Lucrezia, Thomas Matos, Chris Medlin, Laura Stracco, Bethany Tesarco. Directed by Christopher Ashley, this immersive experience was immersively experienced by Ergo Fismes and De Prestival.
End of transmission. Find us on the internet, radio.fm. Over and out.